connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for the web. Computer today.
Computer.
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 NetSurfer Pro.
Did you ever think this day would come?
It's a Tuesday currently.
Yeah, but I mean more, you know, the post-January of 2024 world we now live in.
I mean, in like 2019 and 2020, I certainly didn't, but what's so special about this?
Well, you know, we live in a fundamentally different world from what we did about a month ago. You know, a month ago, everything was really dark and dreary. Every day I walked outside and it was raining. It was like being in the UK or somewhere even worse. And then the clouds parted and a beam of sunshine came down from above. And I looked up and saw, well, an old friend, you could say.
Jesus?
Even older, I would argue. That's right. Friend of the show.
Hammurabi?
No, although he had a pretty good code, actually.
Learn to code.
Learn to Hammurabi's code. No, Friend of the Show Pal World was released just last month. And
no way!
Viewers at home, we have been so excited for this day to come.
Viewers at home, you may be watching a third-party re-upload of our podcast because we don't upload to video sites.
True. And I really hope at the very least it's one of those videos that has like the visualizer from, you know, Windows Movie Maker.
Oh, that would be so cool for a podcast, though. Hold on.
That actually would. Hey, copyright.
Hold on. Winamp for podcasts.
Oh, my God. Okay. This entire show is now copyrighted. You cannot. You shouldn't even be listening to this, but please do keep listening.
Yes, because this is NetSurfer Pro, a whirlwind ride through the World Wide Web. I am your host, Matthew Marissa.
And of course, I am your co-host, Galen.
And yeah, it is Pal World time. Everyone's talking about it. We may be a little late to the exact sort of peak relevancy.
But we were early on the hype train for Pal World.
Yeah. So, okay.
We're actually the real fans, if you think about it.
For those who aren't familiar, so Pal World just came out last month. We've been playing it. And we have been anticipating the game for, like, almost the length of this podcast. Like, I think 2019 was when...
It was definitely, like, somewhere in 2020, or, like, maybe 2019. Yeah, it has genuinely been for the past at least 3, maybe 4 years.
Yeah.
We have been, like, excitedly watching every trailer and replying everything we saw.
It's the reason we made Trailer Blazes a segment.
It is.
With like its own name and theme song and everything.
And it's out. And like it lit the internet on fire.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. But I kind of want to just talk about the game itself first.
Yes.
We'll get into everything around the game afterwards, but I think we need to talk about what the actual gameplay is, because that is a huge part of the game. It sounds dumb saying that the gameplay is a huge part of the game, but I think also it's a huge part of the whole je ne sais quoi surrounding it.
Yeah.
I know, well, that's not the correct term for je ne sais quoi, but I also don't know what else to say, so.
So, like, I would compare it, for example, to Among Us, where, like, the game and the internet entity are two very separate things. The game is, in Among Us's case, you know, a fairly good social deduction game, whereas the, you know, the meme itself went through a million different phases.
I kind of view Among Us the same way I view Shrek.
Yeah.
It's sort of, the crewmate is one of those characters.
Yeah, an internet canon character, kind of. And so, yeah. But for right now, let us start off with the game itself, because the game itself really informs a lot of why it blew up, and it's also genuinely really interesting from kind of a marketing standpoint. Business people, real business people with suits and everything, are talking about this game.
Yeah. So, I will say one thing about sort of the reception is that this became one of the highest, like, played and purchased games on Steam.
Yeah.
Like, top two, I think.
Yeah. Like, more concurrent players than Starfield, which is very funny.
Mm-hmm. Todd Howard cannot win.
Yeah. Like, genuinely one of the most concurrently played games on Steam, I think, ever. It is, honestly, it's kind of ingenious. So, What is Palworld the game?
A hybrid of like a survival game, survival crafting game, and Monster Tamer, with more of an emphasis on the survival crafting.
Yes. And that's kind of it, but let's talk about it.
Yeah.
So this game borrows heavily from a multitude of different genres. A direct point of comparison is like Ark Survival Evolved or Conan Exiles, like games where you, you know, punch a tree, get some wood, build a base, create a million different craftable benches, and slowly work your way up a tech tree until you can shoot guns at people. Fundamentally, that's more or less the progression of the, you know, the science tree, as it were. So that's one side of the game. The active gameplay side that doesn't involve the pals is fairly close to something like, it's still very Ark Survival Evolved, but it has a lot of notes from Breath of the Wild, mostly in the stamina bar. Stamina management is a major function of the game, and it, you know, it adds just a little bit of spice to the active gameplay that I think helps you not get completely burnt out on it. However, the major, major thing that was the focus since trailer one has been the pals.
Yes. So the pals are, it's a monster tamer, monster catching game. You have all these different pals of different designs and elements. They have elemental based attacks, and you catch them in balls when their health gets low, and you can send them to fight. And also, a big part is that they play a huge role in the base management systems.
Yes.
They are integrated into the survival crafting systems. The main thing is that every pal has jobs they can perform at the base, and those interact with different buildings and machines and whatnot. So, like, a fire-type pal can light a cooking fire to cook food for you. A grass-type pal can plant seeds or harvest seeds, or maybe even cut down trees for you. And so they are tied into the automation and the base building of the game, as well as like combat exploration. You can ride on some of them. Some of them you can use as like a Breath of the Wild glider. I'm very specifically not mentioning the main game in the genre of monster catching, because I don't want to fall into that pitfall yet. We're going to hit the pothole eventually, but I want to swerve around it for now.
Yes.
I'm like doing donuts in the parking lot, to continue this extended metaphor.
Yes. We're going to bring up Monster Rancher for the PlayStation 1 later.
However, and Shin Megami Tensei.
However, for right now, I think it is worth analyzing the gameplay on its own merits, because it does a lot of very interesting things. Like you said, the fact that it automates a lot of the heavy lifting parts of games like Ark, games like, you know, oh, wow, I just tried to think of a second one in that exact same genre. Rust, there we go.
Yeah, so I need to preface this. I don't normally like survival games. I think I've just had bad experiences with them, but I don't like the worlds in a lot of survival games. I don't enjoy the process of surviving. Like, there's a thing where, like, oftentimes the survival mechanics get in the way of exploration, mm-hmm. or, like, base building makes it hard to go far out from the base. And then also a big thing is like the manual labor involved.
Yes.
This is, I think, something a lot of things miss that Minecraft did. Is Minecraft, like, at the start, it had a lot of things that inadvertently let you sort of automate, especially using water.
Yeah.
People would like harvest crops by flooding them, and then the water would drain into a pit. But, like, eventually they added more mechanics with things like droppers and hoppers and pistons that allowed them to further create machines that automate. That is a big component of, like, so many popular mods for Minecraft.
Yeah.
Is the,
like, create mods and such where, yeah, you know,
feed the beast.
You essentially kind of factorio it. You just increase the industrial scale.
You add tubes.
Yeah.
And Factorio is a great example of a game that leans into that to create, like, it is a logistics and I've called it a science game before, where it's a game that rewards experimenting with systems to create essentially like machines and weird processes and components.
A fully functional, like, high level Factorio base is practically indistinguishable from a computer chip in terms of like functionality.
Yeah, like that is sort of a really cool component of these games, but like, if you were to play, like, Don't Starve, there are machines that process materials, but there isn't like a thing that then moves it from one machine to the next, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah. For the most part, it is like ferrying things back and forth between a lot of, you know, bespoke timers, more or less.
Yeah. And Raft didn't really have any progression in that regard, or at least very little. I played Raft with friends, though. I'll get to like the co-op in a second. That's a big part of why I don't really enjoy these games. That's just like, a lot of these games kind of expect you to do a lot of manual work, but the fact that Pal World has this automation is really nice. What I'm going to reference multiple times is there's a few interviews that the CEO of the company Pocket Pair has done. Pocket Pair, by the way, created Craftopia previously, though from what I understand, the team for Pal World was mostly different. But Mizobe, the CEO of Pocket Pair, did a interview with automaton.com, as well as made a blog post on note.com, which was translated by @Repetio. By the way, Repetio, I believe we have an outstanding invitation, but if you want to come on and talk about Cartoon Network Punch Time Explosion... But so I'm going to be referencing these a few times throughout this episode. These are both really important as far as like just sort of the general perception of Pal World and what we know from behind the scenes. But I believe that the CEO Mizobe said that this decision was influenced a lot by like Minecraft and then also like games built around automation.
Yeah.
That was a thing that things like Rust and Ark didn't really have that he thought was missing from the genre.
And honestly, I think he's very correct about it.
Yeah, one of my favorite things is that two of the important resources in the game can be completely automated, wood and stone.
Yes.
Pretty early on, you get, like, generators for them. And so as long as you have a pal that is, like, working at that location with either mining or chopping, you can automate that resource collection. And since that happens no matter how far you are from the base, it really allows you to explore and not worry about, like, these really basic resources that are used in everything.
Yeah, so let's dig into the gameplay a little bit.
Yeah.
And let's dig into the pals a little bit specifically.
Yeah.
So, part of the appeal, there's 111 pals. Number one, I think that's a pretty good number, honestly.
That's a fun number.
That's a very fun number to have.
I would prefer 121 or 120 just because it's a square number, but a 111 is still fine.
Yeah, but number two, there's, like, 10 or so bespoke actions that pals can, you know, take in general, like you said. But the reason I bring up, the reason I'm re-explaining, is that a lot of the personalities of pals is specifically tied to, like, the number of things that they can do or the specific type of things. For example, one of the first, I think, like, I'm going to say mini bosses that you'll probably encounter is Eichthirdir, and they're not usually the toughest exactly, like, especially once you get just generally better progression, but they almost all spawn at like level 9, level 11, and when you start off, you know, at level 1 with nothing, obviously that's sort of a hurdle to cross.
Yeah.
But they're also a very important hurdle to cross because they are literally, I think, the earliest ones that can actually chop wood.
I want to say the green monkey can.
Lifmunk?
Not Lifmunk. Tansy.
Tansy. Tansy can, but Tansy shows up in later areas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Actually, but to that note, a lot of the, like, henchmen, the henchmen pals, Lifmunk, Kativa, probably also to an extent the wool, the little sheep guy who I can't
Lamball.
Remember. Lamball. A lot of them have like wide varieties where it's like they not only can, you know, chop wood, for example, which like Eichthirdir, for example, can really only chop wood, but he does it very well. Lifmunk can help build, can help craft, can help carry things from one area to the other, can help plant. Kativa can help mine, can help build as well.
Can help harvest.
A lot of Pengullet is also a pretty good like henchman mon that can water things as well as also being able to craft and, you know, build, etc., etc. And so, you know, you end up having these kind of classes of pals informally, but still, you know, still kind of specific, where it's like, You've got ones that are very, very good on the base side, ones that have one bespoke purpose on the base side but are very useful. A lot of fire pals end up in that area as well, especially if you get somebody with level 2 fire at least. Oh my god. It's always very helpful. But then you have things like Tokotoko, or Dire Howl, where they don't have a whole lot of specific base use. However, carrying them around in your party gives you a really good functionality. Dire Howl is another, like, I'm going to say somewhat mini-boss-y one.
It's sort of a difficulty spike.
Yeah, like, a Dire Howl from a fresh player standpoint is kind of a big threat because they're not just pretty strong, but they will actively hunt you down.
And they come in packs.
Yep. However, once you get even one, if you can craft a Dire Howl saddle, which isn't terribly difficult with the materials provided to you, they are by far the best early game movement option.
Yeah.
Like, they are just generally really fast. That's actually the other thing, too, that I really like. It feels like that is an aspect of the progression. Like, just being able to get to different parts of the world a lot easier is part of the progression, because, like, the game operates on fast travel nodes, and they're sometimes annoyingly placed. They're sometimes very large stretches with nothing, but, like, that kind of encourages you, you know, through subtle, like, just gameplay language to be like, okay, I really need a traversal pal. Even a level 1, like, you know, a Chillet or an Alpaca, like, even one of the lower level ones will still be generally helpful at that period.
Yeah. Yeah, so essentially what you're getting at is that the instead of the pals just being used for combat, they are integrated into, like, every part of the game.
Yep.
And even then, there are some that are used in combat, but that's, like, their niche. But I think that appears more of a niche because there are some where their niche is in the base or for utility. You know, you have ones that you ride around and they're fast, but you might not want to use them in a fight. Because, like, things like type advantage are still a thing.
Yep.
Whereas, like, Tokotoko, which you mentioned, is a grenade launcher.
Yeah.
It's essentially the Breagle Blaster from Banjo-Kazooie.
It really is.
And so, like, that bird does not have any right doing anything else in your team or your base. It just exists to shoot egg.
Yeah.
But, like, that's kind of interesting in terms of, like, a way to view roles in a game.
Yeah.
Because the thing with a lot of monster tamers is you kind of have to balance individuality with appearance and individuality in gameplay. Like, if you have all these monsters that are all cool, but they all do the same thing, it does let players kind of choose which ones are their favorite. But it's really hard to get people invested into some of them. Because, like, for me at least, in that other monster taming series, like, some of my favorites are ones that have really interesting roles and niches. And I think in this game, too, a lot of the more interesting pals are the ones I've grown attached to, are the ones that have very specific uses.
There's one thing that a friend of ours has pointed out, is that to breed pals, which is a like mid to higher level thing you want to do with pals, it requires an egg, which is literally only lain by the literal shittiest pal, Chicopee.
Yeah.
Like, Chicopee, the little guy who's just a little chicken, lays eggs, and that's practically all they do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's incredibly important, and that's really fun that, like, even the earliest pal you can get practically has a specific niche that only they can fulfill.
Well, I never had a garbanzo bean lay an egg in my base. Yeah. So I think that's really cool. I also do like that a lot of the early pals help you with crafting, because that is the thing you're doing the most when you're early on.
Yep.
The game has this, like, quest line that introduces the game to you. It's just, like, in the top right. It's like, you know, build a crafting bench. When you complete that, you get a little bit of experience. Otherwise, you mainly get experience from traveling, fighting, and catching pals. Every time you catch a pal, it adds to, like, a tracker.
Yeah,
and
a tally.
As you catch more of that pal up to 10, it gives you more and more experience each time.
With the 10th specifically giving you a pretty heavy buff that's kind of necessary to really power level. And yeah. I don't say that as a bad thing. That's mm-hmm. just you know, part of the gameplay loop is, okay, now's the time that I need to go out and catch 10 lamb balls.
It's not too hard, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, there's definitely thought put into there. As far as the world goes, it is very archipelago-y with islands that are connected in pretty specific locations. Like, gaps that are kind of hard to jump across or glide across if not for being close together at one spot. Or there'll be, like, land bridges and stuff like that. Pretty standard open world as far as I'm concerned. One that is relatively sort of guided. One thing, though, is that when you die, you can respawn at a fast travel point, except there are multiple respawn points at, like, various islands. Each of these islands has starter-level pals, but it's essentially meant for a multiplayer, because this game does have multiplayer.
Yeah.
But as far as, like, the otherwise sort of the progression goes, it's kind of what you would expect with pretty basic pals at the start, and then they get weirder, more wild, more types as you go. There are a few different objectives on the map. The actual mini-bosses, I would say, are like the elite monsters, which will have a name and they'll appear on the map.
Yes.
These are usually bigger, they have a higher level, they are harder, but sometimes they are unique or they're like, you can get them earlier than otherwise. Like, you can find the Chillit pretty early on by fighting the named Chillit.
Yes.
Versus, like, having to find them in the wild. Then there are also dungeons, which are these, like, caves you can explore, and they're dungeons. They're kind of what you would, I mean, they're dungeons?
Yeah, they're the equivalent of, like, Skyrim caves, honestly.
Yeah, pretty much.
They're just, you know, oh, hey, I found a new hole in the place. At this point, I've literally gone in one and abandoned every other one that I found, because I was like, well, I'm looking for fast travel points, so I don't really care about this right now.
Yeah. And then there are also towers, which are where you actually fight bosses.
Yes.
There's a few of these. The bosses scale to your level, which is very annoying because I thought... Because, like, it says, like, make sure you have your pals at a high level and you're well prepared for the fight. That's, like, on the tooltip because it's one of the last things you do for that tutorial tooltip.
Yeah.
But, like, I got to, like, level 10 or 12, and then I fought it, and it was really hard. And I was like, God damn it. I waited too long. So don't wait too long to fight the first tower, but these are more like, I would say, gym battles, if you will.
Yeah.
Except they usually just have one pal, from what I understand.
It's basically, it's more just, you know, an actual boss fight,
yeah.
But it is kind of like stylized like a gym battle, because at the very least the first one, which I think is the only one I've actively seen, I will say.
Yeah.
Like, the very first one is I don't even remember her name, but she has the big, like, Electabuzz-looking thing. Ah, shit, I said one of the monster things.
Yeah,
monsters. It has the big Totoro-looking dude, she, like, rides his shoulder, and she's actually the weak spot that if you hit her, she
Oh,
does
I didn't know
damage.
That.
Yeah,
that's funny.
Really funny.
Yeah, so it is a dodge roll champ game.
Yes.
You can dodge roll, and that's very useful for so many things.
It really is.
I didn't craft a shield, even though they have those. I was just like, I'm just gonna dodge roll through this. And it was okay. It took me a few tries, but it wasn't too bad. You know, not much else to say, really, about the combat. It's not anything special. It feels pretty standard for these types of games. You know, you have melee weapons that kind of suck. You have a bow and arrow that you can upgrade over the course of the game, and that's your main way of dealing damage. And then your pals have a number of elemental attacks that are usually ranged attacks.
Some of your pals, like we've mentioned, can be used as weapons as well, but in general, your progression is like bow, crossbow, musket, more guns.
Yeah, it's of course a punch, rock, get gun game.
Yes, and the guns are part of the appeal of, like, directly part of the appeal of this game. Some of the earliest marketing was literally like, hey, it's like that monster tamer, but with guns.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I kind of love it. This game has no lore, as it were, but the vibe of it is very fun.
Okay. So I want to get to that, but I really want to say one more thing about the gameplay,
yes.
Which is that there is one more sort of general objective, which is the Syndicate. There's, like, an evil team of bad guys that will try to, they like have pals in cages.
Yes.
And usually these are more unique ones or rare ones. And when you free it, they join you automatically. And you can like raid their syndicate bases, but also they're just around and they will try to shoot you. And you can capture them and like have them work in your base, or you could just sell them to the people that buy pals. It's wild. Okay, now we can talk about that. Because I think a big part of this game is the absolute batshit concept behind it. And how it leans so hard into that curve.
Okay, this game, if you want the specific reason why this game did well. And I am throwing out every part of my enjoyment. I'm looking at this purely as a marketing standpoint. This game is a streamer game.
Yes.
This game marketed itself directly towards people who were watching, like people who were watching the PS4 State of Play or whatever the fuck, and then saw that first trailer and saw that it had a Pikachu looking thing with a gun and went, what the fuck?
Yeah, Pokemon with guns is sort of the term people say, and it's not entirely wrong. It is funny though, because you don't get guns for quite a while in the game.
True.
But like, that was a big part of the appeal of the game. And not just that, I think, but like, since the start, they really leaned hard into the like weirdly dark aspects of like slave labor.
Yes.
And like, you know, slave camps and sweatshops and like every trailer that focused on other parts of like the base building and gameplay just added more to that. And I think that was a big thing, is the total clash of silly cute monsters with this is, you know,
construction assembly line, this little Lifmunk looking sad surrounded by 500 others.
It's like a PETA parody game, but played completely straight.
Yeah. Like, and that is directly part of the appeal too, is just like, you know, it's a game that allows you to be a bit of a dick by catching a little chipmunk and putting it to work.
And you know what's also funny is like, that is not the goal of the game.
Yeah.
Because, so pals do have like stress levels and health levels, and a big part of base management is making sure the pals are happy by like having comfort, being well fed. One of the early improvements you get is like a hot tub for them to relax in.
Yeah.
And like you want to swap them out so that they can take breaks.
The one aspect that requires a bit of management that I really like is that there's a pal feed box, which is usually where all of your berries are going to go. Except if you just let your pals eat raw berries, they're going to continue to lose sanity. So like literally at the bare minimum, baking your berries and just throwing the baked berries in there is at least enough to kind of, you know, make things even out. But like, it kind of emphasizes that your pals need that little bit extra care. You can at any point mouse over a pal and pet it. You can just be like, hit four, mouse over pet, and be like, hey, Kativa, come here. And you give it a little pet.
You can mouse over a pet so you can pet over a mouse.
True. There's actually no mouse pal in the game. I mean,
Jolthog is kind of close.
Yeah, that's fair. But it's a hedgehog.
Sure.
It is a hedgehog. Its name is Jolthog.
That hedgehog again.
Where's that damn fourth pal base? Yeah.
Yeah, like, I think they won marketing points by leaning into the sweatshop aspect, but that is not the goal of the game, to be like this evil, like, overlord boss.
Honestly, the game kind of explicitly encourages you to not be that. I think that capturing humans is essentially frowned upon by the game, more or less.
I haven't found anything that would punish me for it.
That's fair. I'm willing to bet it might add people to the rotation of people who attack you, honestly.
Maybe. I just have a guy walking the beat right now.
Nice.
Like Sergeant O'Leary.
But like, yeah, the management of keeping your pals happy is being a direct part of the game. And like, the fact that your pals also have a lot of personality unto themselves, and the fact that, you know, you can directly interact with them. You can pick any of them up and throw them at some kind of task, and it'll be like, okay, boss, I'll stop lazing about in the ranch all day and actually build something, I guess. You know, you have the management aspect, you have the sanity aspect. it really encourages you to get attached to your pals in a certain way.
Yeah.
This is also a game where, like, the best way to level up your pals is to blend five others.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is very funny.
Yeah. But, like, you know, it still has that encouragement of, like, wanting you to get attached to your dudes, mm-hmm. more or less.
Yeah. So, I want to mention something, which is that another thing where I think this game really works, where a lot of other survival games didn't for me, is what the pals add, which is that, so I kind of hate a lot of open world games because they're boring.
Understandable.
Like, especially the world design, it feels like they don't really have a lot of interesting areas. And the areas they do have that are interesting are either few and far between or just, like, used for, like, a story quest, but not as part of the world itself. While Power World doesn't entirely have great areas, I would say it has some that are a lot better than what Scarlet and Violet has.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking, like, graphical fidelity. I mean in terms of design and direction and, like, appearance. However, I think the pals add a lot to this. So, like, in something like Don't Starve or Scrap Mechanic, there's maybe story reasons to explore, and then there's resources that you can only get by exploring. But, like, you don't really get much else from it, and
yeah.
You have to really push yourself to get out of your base and move. In Pal World, I feel like the pals themselves add a huge reason to explore.
Yes.
Which is, like, so handy to just be like, oh, I want to get a new pal. I'll go in a direction until I get one. Because, like, having goals and being able to set those goals and follow them is really crucial for survival games, because usually they're player driven. You don't have, like, go to the northern realm and capture the stone of Alcidor so you can open the gate to the unknown tomb.
You have to go collect all 7 crystal stars and then you'll open the 1,000-year door.
Yeah. So the pals work as a really good sort of, you know, piece of candy.
Yeah.
If you will. A good trail.
I think it also adds something, the, like, assaults that happen on your base are also a good aspect of that. Because a lot of times, if they aren't humans, they will be pals, and they'll be pals that, like, aren't in the starting areas, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, a lot of the areas that you're more likely to make your first base, you can get attacked by a Lovander and be like, oh shit, now I have a Lovander and they're staggeringly useful around the base.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Toko Toko and be like, now that I have one, I can just get a grenade launcher. Like, you know, it adds that little piece of candy that goes like, oh, they're somewhere out in the world and I can go grab even more of them.
I want to also go back to the bit you were saying about, like, the lack of lore. So this is starting to get into the discussion around the game. But The discourse, that's the word. But I kind of love how this game gives no fucks. Like, this game, at many times it does feel like a copy of Pokemon in some ways. But, like, at the same time, I kind of don't care, and I love, because, like, there's so many times where people will make, like, a game that looks like Pokemon, but, like, it ends up sucking because it plays like nothing, and there's no new ideas to it, so it's just a monster tamer with elements. But, like, all the other stuff added to this game really gives it an identity, to where the monsters that do feel like direct, like, maybe not copies, but sort of, you know, really reminiscent of existing Pokemon.
Yeah.
Cough, Lamball, cough. Feel like... like, it's part of the joke. It's,
yeah,
like, part of the bit, almost. Like, Pokemon with guns is such a, like, such a wild, like, parody of an idea that it feels like that's what the rest of the game is going for, and it almost gives it a pass. I wanna bring up, like, a parody movie, but it's kind of hard to bring them up because most are bad, and the good ones are not quite as obvious on the nose. I guess I could say, like, Scary Movie.
Yeah.
When one of the Scary Movies has a reference to a movie, it's not that they're copying it. It's that it's just like a direct, like, look, remember that? And maybe that's not the best example. Hold on. I'm just going to cut this from the record. Excised. It might not necessarily be a parody of Pokemon. And from what I can tell, they're really trying to be like, no, we didn't take any inspiration from Pokemon because they are being investigated by Nintendo's lawyers.
Yeah.
I do want to mention that in the Automaton interview, Mizobe said that they went through multiple legal, like, reviews before releasing the game.
Yeah.
So, you know.
There's two things I want to say to the air of the discourse, and then I never want to talk about it again, as it were. Number one is, if Nintendo thought they had a case, Power World would not have sold 8 million copies. It would have been immediately struck down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Nintendo doesn't have a legal case here in that, yes, it takes obvious inspiration. Like, it's insane to try and insist that, it doesn't. And to a certain extent, you could call it copying design elements. However, they're allowed to do that. Like, they are allowed to do that. Legally, it is distinct enough to, be its own original thing. Or it, skirts just enough to the line of parody that, legally speaking, they would be protected. And even if it legally wasn't a parody, cassette beasts also exist. Like, there are other, like you said, other games that are in this specific genre of monster tamer that, while not as directly, specific as Pal World is, also exist and, also are unique enough to not be just copies, not be legally, able to be sued for it. And number two, the moral aspect is, I'm trying not to be mean about the discourse, because,
yeah. Okay, let's take a step back.
Yeah, let's take one step
back. I want to establish a few of the main topics around the discourse. So the first is that the monsters look like Pokemon. I will start off by saying that this is a problem that a number of monster taming games have, is that people automatically assume it's a Pokemon ripoff, or like Monster Sanctuary. From what I've heard, it's a very good monster taming game, but if you bring it up, it's isn't that a Pokemon clone? I think this is a problem that platfighters have had for a long time as well, with being labeled Smash clones.
Yeah.
Is because there is a big, big property in the genre, everything gets compared to that automatically. And I mean, Pokemon wasn't even the first monster tamer.
Yeah.
A lot of people point to Shin Megami Tensei or some of the Dragon Quest monsters type stuff.
I did just bring up Monster Rancher. That's another example that has its own direct cult following.
Yeah. And these are all pretty different games with some similarities. And I mean, but at the same time, there are a lot of elements of Power World that are very reminiscent of Pokemon.
The fact you catch them in balls itself is pretty obvious.
Yeah.
But
again, it's hard to really say that Pokemon has a monopoly on this idea. Or just a copyright on it.
Yeah.
They're not called Pokeballs. They're spheres. They even don't use the word ball, which I think is very important as far as the legal way goes. I don't really know how Japanese copyright law works anyways. It's complicated as it is for America, but to add another country of different legal systems in play, that's a whole other issue.
One thing I will bring up is that, of my very, very limited knowledge of the Japanese legal system, one of the important ideas is, and there's a specific word for it that I don't remember because I'm not Japanese, but there's a specific word for it that is essentially equivalent to, technically speaking, you could be sued by the rights owner, but only if they really decide to challenge it. It's the concept in, copyright law that allows a lot of, doujinshi to just kind of continue to exist, is technically speaking, this is illegal, but unless the property owner actively seeks it out and says no, you're fine. And I think that idea is definitely a little bit of what they were banking on, is so long as Nintendo doesn't think they have a case, they're gonna continue to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And, Nintendo has gone off, Nintendo has gone after mods that tried to add Pokemon to the game.
Yeah, that's, I think, a really important thing, is they're aware the game exists. They also made that press statement, I'm pretty sure just because people kept flooding them with emails and calls and messages about Pal World.
Yeah,
they're
basically.
Stop it. We know Pal World's real. We're looking into it. Shut up.
Yeah, pretty much.
I have no idea what will come of it. If there is a case, then we'll see what happens there. I don't want to speculate, but then you look at some designs and it's okay, I can see. Lamball looks a lot like Wooloo. It's not maybe the most unique thing to have a sheep in the shape of a ball, but even then I could see that looks pretty similar. I will say a lot of PALs look like Pokemon fusions.
Yes.
Which, so here's a behind the scenes bit for our podcast. In our previous Talk Surfer, we had a whole PAL World section that we discussed before the game came out that I cut because I was like, well, this feels really out of date now because we played
yeah.
it. But one of the things I brought up is that it feels like a Pokemon Fusion fan game that was turned into a real game. And while that's not the case, the dev history is a bit more explained nowadays. It's still like, it feels like that to me in a lot of ways. Like, it feels like they were like, let's take this element and combine them. And not literally, but like, I don't know, that gets into a bit more of a complicated situation of creativity. Like, is that creative enough? Because I think when people talk about things like this, it starts to get into the morality of creation. So like, okay, we're talking about the legal aspect. Law doesn't always equal morality. I think there's this really interesting thing. For one thing, there is an interesting discourse around the difference between artists working for a company. So like, you know, the leftist in us want to say, fuck that big company. Yeah. You know, it's legal to steal from Nintendo. But then I also see people that are like, well, that's the work of artists, and so you're disrespecting artists. And that is an interesting line of thought that I think people don't really discuss in the first place, is the difference between people working for a company and the company itself.
Yeah.
I'm reminded of a recent thing about how, like, there is somebody calling for all the staff members on, like, the upcoming Harry Potter series to leave and quit their job or else they're not true allies. And it's like, they're working for a wage. They are the working class. But like, so with artists, it's like they're making art for the biggest media franchises in the world. But does that art belong to them, like, spiritually or like,
yeah.
like if you were to, cause I believe in sampling really heavily.
Yes.
And sampling largely, for me at least, is a punching up sort of method. That's why I'm okay with, like, sampling stuff from, like, Green Day or, you know, any number of pop artists, because they are big artists. I'm not really affecting their livelihood through this, even though they are creators, and I can recognize that they are artists with their own intention. It doesn't feel the same as if I were to sample from somebody with, like, 10 listens on SoundCloud.
Yes. There's a couple of, for example, Jazz Emu songs that I've kind of wanted to use in mashups, but I've genuinely gone like, yeah, but I don't know if people would even know that it's Jazz Emu. And, you know, if it's not recognizable, then I don't know if that's
Ellie exactly it. Yeah, Ellie Spectacular on her mashup albums will specifically cite the artists for these smaller things.
Yes.
So, like, she has used The Living Tombstone before. And she cites The Living Tombstone on the track as, like, a co-artist.
Yeah.
Or, like, featuring that or what have you. Whereas, like, she doesn't cite Alanis Morissette, because everyone who's familiar with pop music to certain degrees from 90s and 2000s knows what an Alanis Morissette song is.
Yes.
So, like, that's sampling, though. As far as, like, is it morally okay to copy Pokemon designs? Generally, I would say, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm just a person on the internet. I'm just a little guy. I would be, I mean, I've done Pokemon spriting in the past where it's combining Pokemon sprites together.
Yes.
That was a whole thing in the 2000s on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
Shout outs to 205205. I hope you're doing well. And shout outs to, is it Alana or is it Aliana? Who is trans and she is cool.
It's Eliana. That's the character that you play, who's also trans and cool.
So, like as far as combining Pokemon together, that's something I'm familiar with. And let's not forget that Pokemon Infinite Fusions kind of blew up last year.
Yeah.
And that is a fan game built around combining Pokemon. Does turning that from, like... So, like, here's another thing. Let's imagine a Pokemon fan game that everyone loves that got C&D'd by Nintendo. If they were to then change the designs just enough on the knob that they look slightly different, they're Blahnik, you know?
Yeah.
Then would that, like, make it okay? Because I think people often view Nintendo and co. as, like, these evil aggressors against creativity. But, like, this is a dev that is essentially doing the bare minimum to avoid that.
Yeah.
And suddenly they're vilified for it when, like, I don't know. I don't know, you know? It almost feels like it's more accepted to just copy directly because that's a fan work.
Yeah, it's... it feels like a lot of the target of the discourse is mostly around, like, the devs are bad people for reasons A, B, and C. And I will admit, I've heard that the devs haven't been particularly great.
I'll get to that in a bit.
Yeah, but, you know, it's like, it's sins of the father, essentially, of like, you know, the devs are bad people, ergo, what they have made is bad, ergo...
if you play it, you're bad.
Yeah. And I just don't think, I just don't feel that.
Yeah.
The point that I would like to bring up ultimately is, and this is probably one of the meaner things I've ever said, but I think that the H Bomber Guy video over plagiarism did not prepare the internet for the discussion about plagiarism
100%.
In the way that they think it did in general.
100%.
Because, like, it's really funny that, like, that came out and then we just kind of immediately had this big case of, like, what if, is this plagiarism? And it just isn't. And I don't even mean, like, here, legally, we've already discussed it. If we're talking morally, then, like, yes, technically it is, you know, taking directly aspects of Pokemon's design to create, you know, something more original, but still very clearly inspired. That's not plagiarism. Like, in the H-Bomber Guy video, like, itself, he literally, near the end, talks about, like, you know, how just being inspired by other things to then go on to create your own thing literally isn't plagiarism. And it's just like, yes, there are direct aspects lifted from other designs. You cannot look at Lavender and tell me there isn't Salazzle there. You can't look at, King Paka and tell me that he doesn't have, like, the Delibird triple stripe, triple, you know, face thing, and doesn't have aspects of, like, other Pokemon in him. But that's allowed. They're allowed to do that. There's games that are inspired by, like, Animal Crossing in the, you know, like, real-time aspect, like Cozy Grove and things like that. And they have, you know, direct aspects of that. But if somebody made a game that, you know, borrowed heavily from the visual stylings of Animal Crossing, you wouldn't be like, that's plagiarism. They have plagiarized this big company.
Yeah. I think, like, to appeal to the authority of H Bomber Guy, he gives permission to Ludwig's yoink and twist mentality,
yeah,
which is to essentially steal a concept but then twist it with, like, a slight difference such that it becomes a new concept.
Yeah.
That's used for video creation, like a video challenge that he then modifies a bit. But I think, like, combining things is a tried and true way of getting a new thing, especially in terms of, like, media. You know, like, speaking of Animal Crossing, Cult of the Lamb is big.
Yeah.
The character designs are somewhat Animal Crossing-y, but, like, its appeal was Animal Crossing plus Binding of Isaac.
Yeah.
That was, like, the concept behind the game, and that is a combination of two different genres and tones and styles that worked really well for that game. And I think people generally understood that, like, while it looks like Animal Crossing plus all these other roguelites, that makes it a unique game.
Yeah.
I think the other thing about plagiarism, I want to mention that there has been a lot of discussion about whether or not the game copied models from Pokemon. This has been this huge thing. I need you to understand, I'm not a 3D artist. I don't really understand all the tech behind it. That being said, while there are similarities, it doesn't feel like there are smoking guns.
Yeah.
There's been some that are very similar to where I could see that the artist might have used a Pokemon model as a reference. Whether that counts as tracing is really hard to say. I feel like if they went in and, like, removed or touched up some of those, it would be better. It sucks that they would have to be called out on it. But, like, there hasn't been a complete one-to-one copy like people have claimed.
Yeah. And That's honestly another case where I really feel like if there was some kind of one-to-one copy, they absolutely, like, Nintendo would have struck that down on them before release even.
Yeah.
And been like, hey, you can't just use Salazzle's fucking model.
Yeah. Because, like, I also think it's really hard to tell just from videos and images whether or not it's the same, because there's a lot of fidelity lost in that shift from, like, 3D to 2D.
Yeah.
You're essentially flattening the model down, and, like, when it comes to 3D models, you have to look at them at multiple angles to catch all, like, the vertices and triangles and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to get that from just one angle or a few shots. So it's hard to do from just as a spectator and not someone with, like, experience with Maya or anything. That's, like, maybe the most I've seen that's really compelling, but even then there have been counter-arguments and counter-counter-arguments, and I don't want to name names because some people have already been harassed over this.
Yeah, same. Like, there was one person I quote-tweeted, and I literally kind of felt bad about it because they were already getting a million replies. But it was also a case of I was like, I feel like I need to add to this because ultimately I don't like that this discourse is happening, and not even in a way of like, I don't like this because I like this game. I feel like the discourse didn't help anything. Yeah. Ultimately.
The other discourse that we need to bring up is AI.
Yes.
This game, as far as any one of us can tell, does not use any AI generated assets. The reason people assume it is A, because the CEO said that he's interested in AI, and B, because AI is a hot topic right now.
Yeah.
Now, this is a really complicated topic to talk about, again, because I'm not, like, extremely well-versed on it. I'm not an expert. However, it's also complicated because AI literacy is not at a good spot.
Yes.
I think my general stance on AI is that I'm not opposed to the concept of AI. I don't like training data that is essentially stolen from people without their consent. I think it would be a lot better if there were if we just, like, removed all AI that currently exists and only used opt-in voluntary training data sampling.
Yes.
Additionally, I don't think the usage of AI in a product is that bad. However, I mean, I don't want it to put people out of jobs, mainly just because I don't think we're in a society that can afford that.
Yes.
Like, I don't think that the shows or movies that would be made using AI writers would be good. I understand that it's happening, or that executives want it to happen, artists don't. I'm for the artists, I'm for the actors, the writers, etc. This is what I expected, is that they want to cut costs and make more money, and it's good that unions are fighting against that, because ultimately I want people to be able to live and make a living off of the things they like doing.
Yeah, May I step upon my soapbox for one brief moment?
Yeah, let me just get all the soap out of it.
Yeah, here, just gonna dump out all the soap. Okay, turn it over if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you've turned it so that the inside is okay. So I guess I'm just gonna
The inside's up, but you can step on the soapbox. I didn't say it needs to be raised up.
You know, that's on me. That's on me, I suppose.
There is a soapbox between your foot and the floor.
Fair enough. Please just don't fill it back up with soap when I step in it.
I was already going to do that. If you don't want me to, I have to drain the water again.
Ah, darn it. You know what? Keep the water in. It's fine. All right, so I'm now on my soapbox. I would like to predict what's going to happen for the next couple of years with AI, because I feel like this is essentially just a story that has happened with other technologies. What's going to happen is a lot of high-level executives, and this is already pretty much happening, high-level executives look at AI because it's being billed as the solution to a million different problems. They can downsize a bunch of costs. They're going to go, awesome, we don't have to pay all of these writers, artists, what have you. A lot of those people are going to lose jobs. Again, already happening. What's going to then happen immediately after, step two of this process, is, oh, these models actually don't solve these problems. In fact, they kind of compound some of them. Like, there's going to be cases where AI works, and then there's going to be cases where AI doesn't. And piecemeal, artists and writers are going to get their jobs back when they realize that AI actually doesn't solve everything. Now, that is still bad because they got fired in the first place and they're going to be rehired back at probably lower rates because, again, people at the top assumed that this would solve everything and it just wouldn't. But I also think that just if I can add anything to the discourse, this has happened with so many other technologies.
I was just going to say, like, not even a year ago, this was NFTs and, like, blockchain stuff.
Yeah.
It still kind of is happening with that. Is execs being like, we're looking to see how we can integrate NFTs into our, clothing distribution service.
Yeah. Square Enix is still trying to do things with NFTs, which is insane.
But, like, there's no purpose to doing it. It's just doing it because the people who are behind the technology are selling dreams that aren't real.
Yeah. And in the same way that it crashed and burned, AI is going to not solve all the problems that it insisted it would solve. And people are going to be re-entering the workforce. And that's going to suck for a period. But it's also not going to end the world. And we're probably going to get used to it. Like you said, AI literacy isn't where it should be. And it isn't as high as it is going to be. But, like, ultimately, I feel like AI is a problem that will pass in much the same way that NFTs passed, in much the same way that a lot of other Web 3.0 bullshit passed. The metaverse more or less has passed at this point.
It's a bubble.
Yeah, it's a bubble.
Yeah. I do think there needs to be a better discussion about automation and the future of automation and how that will affect society.
Yes.
Because I do think, maybe not in the next 10 years, but maybe 20 years, technology is getting to the point where more and more, like, labor jobs are going to be automated through some means, and we are just not built to support that many people without jobs. Like, again, I don't want to, like, show my ass right now, but I could totally see, like, janitorial work getting automated further.
Yeah.
That is something that is not super complicated, but, like, still needs some extra effort to do, so it can't be fully automated now. But, like, that means it's going to put some people out of a job.
Yeah.
At that point, you know, do we just say no to the automation? Because I feel like this is sort of just a thought about, like, science, is that I'm very, like, I think if we were in a perfect world, automation would be so cool for stuff like that.
Yes.
But the problem is where we don't have the systems to support people when those methods of getting income are gone.
Yeah.
Those people are working those jobs because they need a job. They're not working it because they love cleaning toilets. Like, maybe they do, but, like,
in general, janitorial work is done because it's fairly stable and lower skill than other positions.
Everyone's got a shit.
Yeah, everyone's got a shit, and somebody's got to clean the toilets.
Exactly. You know, that's just one aspect. It's like the Industrial Revolution, and I don't want to say this is a revolution, you have to live with it, but I think that there are other discussions beyond this, and that this is a sign of things to come that do need to be addressed.
Yeah, I feel like this is ultimately going to coincide with the, like, major tech layoffs that have just been continually happening. I feel like, without doom spiraling,
yeah.
I feel like we are very clearly headed toward a recession, and the U.S. government, at the very least, is just basically staving it off 1, 2, 3, and now you can count to 3, as long as they possibly can before they have to deal with all the consequences.
Yep.
And, you know, like, it's ultimately just going to be another situation of, like you said, we aren't prepared for it, and so ultimately, at some point, we're going to have the bubble pop and a lot of fallout happen, and we're just going to have to pick up the pieces. We've done it before, we'll do it again, and the U.S. will probably fuck up again, but, you know, at the end of it, we might get some pretty decent legislation.
A few things I also want to bring up about AI. Going back to that about automation, I feel like infinitely generated worlds, or, like, AI-generated worlds, has been a thing people have wanted for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think the well for AI is poison, to where if you just say something's AI-generated, people are like, that sucks, that's evil. But, like, at the same time, without getting into the training data, I don't think AI is inherently bad depending on how it's used. It's mainly that they rely on unpaid and untreated labor of others. But, like, Suck Up is a game that came out recently that is really cool and uses AI in an interesting way to essentially create procedurally generated roleplay.
Yeah.
And, like, it's not perfect. It doesn't always make perfect sense, but it's good enough in this scenario. That is, like, a dream game for some people, as far as, like, when they were kids, they're like, what if you could, you know, roleplay and the thing talks back to you? And that's sort of one of the earlier examples of these sort of language learning is AI Dungeon.
Yeah, I was literally about to say, AI Dungeon was the version of this right before, you know, like, GPT and stuff. that like really showed the possibilities of a generative AI model, where, you know, you will start saying like, my name is Thaddeus Braticus, and I'm a knight of the, and then it continues on like, you know, knight of the Arendelle realm. I have a quest to capture the big sword.
This is, I think, the thing that's happened ever since video games were invented, is people wanted D&D, but they can't always have a real dungeon master.
Yeah.
So we are approaching dungeon master as like, that's what AI is it's people trying to get a dungeon master for their video game.
And I would further point out that we just had one of the best examples of why AI will not replace it, which is Baldur's Gate 3, because a human curated experience that is, you know, that emulates a dungeon master will generally always be better than an AI-generated one.
Yeah, like, Baldur's Gate 3 has incredible writing and characters and story, and those are things that are so hard for an AI to get down.
Exactly. Like, the idea of a human-constructed piece, like, even if it has elements of AI to help here and there, having that human oversight will always lead to a better product.
I also want to mention Infinite Craft, which is by the creator of previous Indie Game of the Year winner,
yeah,
Neil.Fun. Infinite Craft is like Doodle God, but AI proc gen to allow for infinite combinations. And sometimes you get really funny ones.
Yeah.
But like, it has a few problems. One, I have found some slurs.
Yep.
They're slurs I am allowed to say if I so chose.
They're slurs we are allowed to
say
if we so
chose. Yeah, they're slurs we're allowed
thankfully.
To change. Yeah. But like, even then, they shouldn't be in there. And there's some that are just like really sus words that I wouldn't want to be in there in the first place. And so like, AI needs a hand to wrangle it. It has problems. You need somebody or else you're going to have a racist chatbot again,
yeah,
as what happens often. Because internet's full of racists. But also, there's a lot that doesn't make sense. Like, adding Godzilla to Godzilla something to get, like, Godzilla Zilla Zilla.
Yeah.
Or, like, Super Saiyan 1 is a thing. Super Saiyan 2 is a thing. Super Saiyan 143 is not a thing. But Infinite Craft believes that it is. Because it is not going off of real combinations. It's just making things up if there's not an obvious one. So, like, that is an example of where AI is helpful in some degrees, but really just fails compared to a more curated experience. And so it's not perfect. Now, I want to go back to Pal World, though.
Yes.
I don't think AI can generate a 3D model like this.
Yes.
Or animate it with, or rig it. Like, there are so many things people assume AI did that I don't think is possible for Pal World. Additionally, there's no reason a person couldn't have made these character designs. Like, they look similar to Pokemon, but that could just mean somebody based them off of some similar things or took inspiration. Like, it doesn't mean AI generated them.
Yeah.
People just assume that bootlegs are now AI generated.
Yeah, it's such a weird, like, it really does feel just kind of like, you know, AI became the boogeyman word and then got retroactively retrofitted to mean, you know, thing I don't like, more or less. Like, yeah, we've already had a couple of examples of people calling something AI when it's very clearly not. And yeah, it's just, as AI literacy improves, we're going to have less examples of this, but for right now, it really does feel like a case of like, if you don't, if you're not 100% certain, I feel like you shouldn't be trying,
yeah,
to make the claim to make it seem worse.
So
you already have the reasons for not liking the game. That's fine.
Yeah. So this is another thing about AI literacy. So I want to bring up an article written for Ars Technica by Kyle Orland about the podcast Dudesy. So Dudesy got into trouble recently for releasing a quote-unquote AI-generated George Carlin special as if it was written today. This got such big attention as being like, dude, you're shaming the dead by putting them through AI. That sucks. That's awful. You know, when Tupac did it, it was kind of funny, but at the same time, people thought, like, that's a really weird thing to do for an icon who died.
Yeah.
Like, that's disrespectful. And even, like, George Carlin's niece, like, sent them a sued them or something. And Dudesy had to admit that their podcast is not AI generated, that is essentially kayfabe, that is a story or a bit they use to add a little bit of spice to what is otherwise just them writing shit. And that would have been okay 10 years ago. But nowadays, that is an actual thing that is a, like, a topic of discussion. Yeah. And so now, like, the thing about it is that when people heard that it was AI generated, they didn't think this is too well written to be AI. They thought, wow, AI is so good, it writes these jokes really funny.
Yeah.
When that's, like, still pretty far out of the realm of AI to make, like, long-running bits that are unique jokes that really, like, touch on multiple subjects and combine them in different ways.
Yeah, AI, there's, as we've currently seen it, is more generally better at a lot of shorter form stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, pre-generated Am I the Asshole posts or, like, you know, creepier wet gym, that sort of thing.
But, like, it is hard to come up with new jokes for an AI.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't really understand what humor is. It knows the basics of humor as far as this is what a joke looks like. And it might have, like, examples of jokes to build punchlines off of, but you're not going to get something that's really that good because humor is so different.
Yeah, I feel like you couldn't, like, I feel like, as a brief example, if this was AI generated a new Mitch Hedberg special, people would have been immediately a lot more sus, because Mitch Hedberg has a lot of delivery and such that you just kind of can't replicate through purely writing jokes.
Well, I mean, delivery is a big part of comedy as a whole.
Also true.
But, like, it's interesting to me because it's essentially, it's like poisoning the arguments around AI that they are promoting this as an AI product to where, like, everyone just assumed they were telling the truth. That now people are, like, if somebody's not aware that they admitted that it's real, they would then think that other things that could be AI are definitely AI, and this proof is that it's able to do this. Like, it's again, it feels like people are just assuming AI can do more than it can, and some of that's because people are pretending that AI is doing more than it's possible to do.
Yeah.
And that leads to things like people assuming, like, of course they would use AI to make 3D models. Why wouldn't they? Without really stopping to look into whether or not that can be done, just because it seems like it could be the case. And that makes talking about it so difficult. And I don't want this entire section to be about AI. I have more Power World specific stuff, but, like, that is a big part of the AI discussion and in turn the Power World discussion. And I think there needs to be a lot more like literature about the actual literal definitions of AI and what it can do currently, as well as, like, what things are and aren't AI.
Yeah.
And people need to be really responsible with whether they label what they're doing as AI or not, because if they are passing something off as AI when it's handwritten, you're both, like, making yourself look worse and you are making AI harder to discuss.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like you said, I like the point you made about, like, 10 years ago this might have flown, but nowadays it doesn't, because, like, people nowadays are looking at the ramifications of things like deepfakes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were doing that when deepfakes were new, for clarity. But, like, you know, with AI becoming such a massive hot button topic, it's something where people are, you know, really, really focusing on that thing of, like, you can't just out and out lie about this because people will get tricked. Like, people have already been getting tricked with deepfakes and stuff. So, yeah. You know.
And on the subject of Dudesy, if they were to just be like, we wrote a modern comedy special as if George Carlin was still alive today, it might be a little cringy, but that is something people do.
Yeah.
That's like, people will go on Twitter and make up fake routines for existing comedians.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been much more normal and okay as far as, like, the legality of it or the reception. But because they made up the fact that it's AI, it got way more attention and negative scrutiny.
Yeah. I would even go so far as to say, like, then taking, you know, a language model of George Carlin and, you know, putting it through that, like, that would be something where I'm sure some, you know, some people would be upset for varyingly good reasons, honestly. But, like, a lot less people would be, you know, would have directly gone out and out, you know, upset with them.
Well, no, because that's what they purported would happen. What happened is they were like, we trained an AI on George Carlin's comedy specials.
I mean, more just like if they had been out and out about, like, we wrote these jokes and then put it through a, you know, like a Carlin AI, like, voice thing.
Oh, that, like, yeah.
That would have generally gone over a lot better.
Yeah.
Still not perfectly, but, like, you know, at that point, it's you're being upfront about the work you're doing, and then upfront about the work that the AI is doing.
Yeah. So yeah, it's complicated. It sucks. I hate it. It's a complicated topic. I want to bring up a few other things about Power World, though.
Yes, yeah. Back to Power World.
Yeah, so I want to go back
Oh,
because...
wait, I got to step off my my soapbox
Don't
real
slip.
Quick. Whoa!
You're fine. You
yeah,
just
I'm
tripped
fine.
A little, but you're okay. So there's a few other things about the blog post on note.com, as well as the Automaton interview, that I think are interesting because they lead to a narrative that the devs are failures, and thus they had to use AI to cover their asses. There's a few things I want to bring up, though. The big one that people cite is the miracle artist, which was somebody with just a middle school education from Hokkaido. This is something mentioned in both the Note.com blog post that Rapetillo had pointed out, as well as in the Automaton interview, which was legally, like, officially translated.
Yeah.
So, this is somebody who was, like, they were a high school dropout working at a convenience store in Hokkaido who taught themselves 3D animation, and they were found not because they needed monster designs, but because they had, like, gun animations they uploaded to YouTube on, like, a demo reel.
Nice.
So, like, it's more so that they needed somebody who animated things like guns, and he even pointed out, Mizobe, the CEO, pointed out that since shooters aren't as popular in Japan, it's a lot harder to find artists with that experience.
Yeah.
Especially artists willing to work with a small company. One thing that I do think is really funny is they had no source control naming, which means that they just had versions of the game that weren't labeled as, like, the next version or what have you.
Oh, no.
So they would keep sending people the wrong versions. Now they have it, but that was, like, something they had to do.
Yeah.
Let's see, it's the first time they made their own models for a game, where previously it was pre-existing assets.
Yeah, that was one that I had heard, and that's really funny to me.
Yeah.
Because, like, the models are actually pretty there's a lot of really charming designs mm-hmm. in Power World.
I want to also mention that they more than quadrupled their staff. Is that they went from, like, less than 10 people, I believe he said, to 40+. Which means that, like, they really realized they had to cover up for stuff.
Yeah.
It led to a much more expensive product than what they had done before as far as development costs. But, like, it's not like they are using AI to skimp out on labor.
Yeah. Like, they clearly, I would even go so far as to kind of say, like, while the game has an air of shovelware around it and that's part of the appeal, I would kind of go so far as to say, like, you can't call the game shovelware even with the, like, slightly sketchy appeal, just because, like, clearly they saw that they were going to have a bigger, like, higher scope product and planned accordingly. Like, the fact they actually hired a bunch more people kind of tells me that, you know, they had general business sense.
Yeah.
And fuck me if that isn't a rarity in AAA dev.
Yeah. I also want to note that the CEO personally optimized the game shortly before it came out, despite not using Unreal Engine before. And now here's the thing. Okay, everyone's looking at this and being like, this studio is such, like, bad. How did they make this game? They must have cheated. Power World isn't a very technically good game. There are a lot of bugs. It's not well optimized anyways.
Yeah.
They've been releasing a lot of patches. I've had so many moments where my pals would get stuck on a rock and then starve.
Yeah.
And, like, this, it is an indie game, and it still has that about the same level of quality in terms of, like, production and craftsmanship. And, like, it looks nice. It has really good design in a lot of ways. But it's still technically kind of a mess.
Yeah, it's jank around the edges.
Yeah, it's very Kusoge in a lot of ways, in a way that, like, Kyanta is.
Yeah.
But, like, it feels representative of the studio's experience and their working structure, you know, the challenges they have said that they've faced in interviews. Like, I don't know, it doesn't feel like there's a disconnect to me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think these are smoking guns or anything. Like, people, I don't know, people view these as, like, negatives against the studio. And while that's, I guess, kind of fair, have you ever seen the source code for VVVVVV?
have you
seen
the...
It's, like, one giant function.
Have you seen the source code for Minecraft?
Yeah.
Like, Minecraft Java was so poorly coded that they made an entire other version so that they could build it from the ground up.
I thought that was because Java had security issues.
It probably was a little of column A, a little of column B, but, like, Minecraft Java is kind of famously difficult to work with in terms of the source code because, like, you know, it went through a million different iterations, mostly from one person and then a big team of people. Like, stuff got lost in you know, the multiple years of development, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Making games is hard.
Yeah. TF2. Oh, God. Anything Valve has ever made and then supported post-release is also part of this discussion, honestly. Oh, God.
At least they didn't have to define what an even number is.
Yeah. I wish there was an easier way to do this.
So, I think my general overall statement on Pal World is it's fun. I respect a lot of the design decisions. Maybe I'm giving it a pass because I enjoy it, and I can understand that that could be a bias. However, I do think it is not as villainous as people claim. While there are some claims that I can see the point behind, I would rather wait for a more official response, because it feels like at that point it is more of a legal claim.
Yeah.
And that is something I don't know how many people actually have a perspective on that could be authoritative.
I want to briefly mention multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
We've only really played up to like 4-player, and it's always kind of a fun game whenever somebody else joins the server and it's like, ah, shit, now I've got to get you geared up with everything.
Yeah.
But the multiplayer itself is pretty fun, honestly. I agree in general, because I know you liked it just kind of a bit less.
Mm-hmm.
I generally do agree with your point that, like, it's probably better if everybody starts on a new world and, you know, just progresses together. But, like, having played it multiple times where, you know, one of my friends would be like, here, I'll just open up my single-player world and, you know, we can just go do whatever the hell. Like, it's fun enough to kind of, you know, be able to skip a lot of the early stuff while still having to, you know, power level and things yourself. Like, it's really engaging. Just, it's also very fun to be with your dudes and with your friends. It's fun to catch a pal and be like, yo, I just caught a lucky deer or whatever.
So that was fun when we first played the game because everything was new.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't feel like I have fun showing off my pals when both me and everyone else knows how common they are.
Yeah.
Or, like, where to get them. I really get this bad sort of catch-up FOMO of, like, it feels like I am so far behind all the other players that I'm either, like, I don't know what goal to pursue, or they are talking about doing things that are fundamentally different from me, and so I feel left out.
Yeah.
And
I'm trying to catch 10 land balls while my friend is trying to find a good ore node spot to set up a second base.
Yeah. And then it also, yeah, like the tooltips and the tutorial stuff, you can't skip or get rid of.
Yeah.
If there was an option to skip that, that would help. And if there was like a sync level to server owner, in the case of joining another player's game, that would help immensely. Just like if it was like I could hop in and assist briefly, that would be great. But I feel like I have to put the same amount of commitment into it as I do my own private game. But then, like, I have 3 friends who own the game, and each of them has their own, you know, save files.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to start over 3 times for 3 different people just to catch up to where they are.
I will also say, I used one of these opportunities to invest solely into attack. Because attack is the most useless stat.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, I want to see if this does literally anything. And shock horror, come to find out, it did basically nothing. And I permanently gimped myself.
It actually kind of hurts you because it's harder to get things to a very low health.
Yeah.
When you have such a high attack. Especially if you're trying to catch low-level pals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was kind of fun. We're currently looking for like the equivalent of a bottle of Fantasia, which requires catching a million Lovander or whatever.
But, like, I remember playing Don't Starve together with friends, and I was like, okay, there's, like, 100 characters. Who do I pick? And they were like, oh, no, I'm picking this one. I'm picking this one. And then I start open it up, and they all go off in different directions. And I'm just standing there in the middle, like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
I played the tutorial for a bit, but you've gotten so far in this game that I'm not familiar with any of these mechanics.
Yeah.
And that is one of the worst feelings in a video game, because it feels like, you know, just getting left behind. And what's the point of playing a multiplayer game then?
Yeah. Now, I will say, if there's any perspective people out there who want to start a, you know, 32-man SMP server of Pal World and are looking for two of the earliest people to back this particularly horse.
Okay, that would be funny, because at the least, if you're doing SMP, you are not trying to reach someone else's progress, whereas if you're only doing full co-op, you kind of are.
Yeah.
Because in co-op, you are as far as the farthest person ahead, but you're also as weak as the weakest person behind.
Yeah.
In SMP, you're each kind of doing your own thing.
That would be honestly, like, I am looking forward to at least one series that is the equivalent of that, of, you know, people deciding to start on different islands and whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, building up bases and stuff.
Like, it could be that we just haven't played it in the method that would fit me and, like, my sort of stylings.
Yeah.
Because we pretty much start it and then immediately start the co-op aspect of the game.
Yeah.
We haven't really done an SMP-style playthrough of Pal World.
Yeah, I would love to do that. I would especially love to do that on a bigger server. But as it stands, the, like, four-player multiplayer itself is fairly fun and compelling. I, at this point, mostly just kind of focus on my own single-player world as well, which friends do help out with, yeah. But I also kind of focus on.
That's really what I've been doing.
Yeah, it's Pal World. In a word, Pal World is exactly what I wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
I am... very happy with the product I was given. I'm kind of impressed that they ended up giving us a product that was, like, actually pretty good.
It's better than I expected in terms of quality and gameplay. It's about as I expected everything else.
Yeah, that's a pretty good way of describing it.
And that's about sort of where I would put it. Yeah. I think, like, the discourse is a lot more about things other than Pal World directly. And I also think the discourse is greater than the game as far as, like, volume.
Yeah.
I can respect people for not playing it for any number of reasons. That's fine. I'm not going to say you should or that you're dumb for not playing it. I understand. People have different people.
Yeah. In general, I think the game is fine. It's fun. Mm-hmm. I would not be surprised if I dropped off of this game very hard after only a couple months.
That's how I do every game, though.
I mean, fair enough, but like
I don't know about you, but me, I'm a burnout guy. I'm a blazing candle, a Roman candle. Just light the fire, get super into it. Oh wait, that's ADHD.
That is what ADHD is, unfortunately. But you know what ADHD isn't? A wonderful podcast that you can find on any podcasting platform.
You can follow us on any podcasting platform you like. Give us a like, give us a rating, give us a review. Let us know how we're doing. Let us know what your thoughts on Pal World and the abomination that it is. Give us, you know,
affectionate.
Let us know what you want to hear from us next. Let us know if you have any recommendations of just things you want us to check out on our own time or on the podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Blue Sky at NetSurferPro. At NetServerPro or at NetServerPro.BlueSky.Social, where you can get teasers on upcoming episodes as well as other updates on our schedule, which is still kind of up in the air and getting modified as far as, like, our personal real lives go, but we're still trying to do two episodes a month.
Yes.
The episode we had planned for this time will come out next.
Yes.
The teaser for that episode still stands. You can follow me on Twitter and Blue Sky at twackaroo at Twitter or twack.bluesky.social, where I post stuff I'm thinking about, a whole lot of pinball high scores. I'm getting kind of cracked at Stern Bond.
Based.
The Dr. No Bond specifically. And Jaws just came out, so I've been posting about Jaws Pro, because that's the only one I've played, not Premium or LE. But if you're interested in that, check that out. I also post tweets on when I go live on my stream at twitch.tv/twack, where I stream sometimes. It's been a little rocky, especially with being sick and also it being the winter with depression and all that.
Yeah, but, seasonal, baby.
Yep. But I'm planning on streaming a whole bunch of stuff, so check that out. Might be some Hitman, some Civ, some roguelites. Either gonna start Lunacid or WarioWare, the new WarioWare, if I can find my Joy-Con wrist straps.
Nice.
Yeah, so check that out.
As for myself, you can find me on Twitter, on TikTok, and on Blue Sky at Galen Wilson. That's at GalenWilson0n dot bluesky.social if you're on Blue Sky. You can find my hot takes, some funny jokes, and occasionally funny videos that I post as well. You can find me on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube, where I'll probably have videos one of these days. I've been actively writing a good couple of them, so I'm really hoping to start actually reading and editing them. And you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/machinegunvampire, where I stream every once in a while. I don't have any specific plans still, because unfortunately, I also have been doing things with jobs related. I've been doing job-related stuff, but...
You've been jobbing.
I've been jobbing.
You're a jobber.
Oi, jobber!
That means something completely different. Yeah.
Anyway,
I've got a great idea, by the way. So, we have Pokemon with guns.
Okay, right.
What about Sonic with guns?
Oh, shit! Wait, Sonic 06 did this, I think.
Fuck, it's already been done 6 times!
Damn it!